We'll call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries to order. The time is 3:32 p.m. on Thursday, May 12th. Members present at this time, Representative McCabe, Representative Vance, Representative Ortiz, Speaker Stutes, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect we do have a quorum to conduct business. As always, we'd ask members to silence their cell phones. If you need to pass a note, please pass through the committee aide. Thank you to Shannon McCain and Doug Bridges. Thank you. I'm so sorry under the pressure of today, not remembering your first name. Thank you so much to your support for our meeting today. We just have one agenda item. This is Senate Bill 227, State Ownership of Submerged Lands. We've heard this bill a couple of times. We have some new documents that we've distributed to committee members, a legislative legal opinion by Alpheus Bullard, who helped draft the legislation, a response from the National Forest Service Alaska, an Anchorage Daily News article, Governor Dunleavy orders steps to assert Alaska's water and land rights over feds, a KYUK article on this, a letter of support from the Safari Club International, and a letter of opposition from the Wild Salmon Center. We have three individuals available for questions and testimony today. We have Alpheus from Legislative Legal, Jim Walker, the Chief of Public Access Assertion and Defense Section for Division of Mining, Land, and Water at DNR, and Brent Goodrum from DNR. And then I guess actually that should say four, because then we have Ron Opsahl, another attorney with Department of Law, who would be able to answer some questions. So we're first going to hear from the folks from DNR. If you could please come up, and we're going to hear the have them describe the differences in the Senate Resources Committee CS and the original version of the bill, since we're hearing the Senate Resources CS right now.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. Jim Walker with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. Members of the committee, thank you for meeting with us today. To briefly identify the changes that were made in the original Senate Bill 227, which was also House Bill 397, they're very minor, and I will highlight the larger change as we go through. With the title, there were inserted the words "and adjacent to" after the words "lands within." Section 1, a similar change, inserted "and adjacent to" after the words "waters in." Section 2, inserted "and adjacent to" after the words "land within." The Section 6 amended the definition of federal areas to read in its entirety, "Federal areas means lands within state borders that are managed by federal agencies, including the National Park Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, United States Forest Service, and Bureau of Land Management, and that are A, subject to a post-statehood federal withdrawal, including a withdrawal by an act of Congress, a federal administrative withdrawal, or a presidential proclamation, or B, subject to a pre-statehood federal withdrawal that does not clearly and explicitly evince intent to defeat state acquisition of title. It added to the definitions of mean high water and mean high water line to read, "Mean high water means the tidal datum plane of the average of all tides, as would be established by the National Geodetic Survey at any place of tidal influence." And subsection 3, "mean high water line means the intersection of the datum plane of mean high water with the shore." It amended the definition of submerged lands to read, "Submerged lands mean land underlying navigable waters up to the ordinary high water mark, or in the case of tidelands, up to the mean high tide, mean high water line." The changes noted above required some technical adjustments to comport with the drafting conventions. Another significant change, there were several typographical errors that were originally created in some spelling. And then the last one was in the section that deals with the determination of navigability, specifically Section 7. the language was amended to remove the language one-third of the open water season and substituting in its place at any time during the open water season. To my knowledge, those are the substantial changes that were made as part of the committee substitute to Senate Bill 227. There is one other matter which we submit was a Scrivener's error, that there was the date of April 20, 2022 was inadvertently inserted in one provision. I believe that it was a typographical error, which we would seek to amend. Those are, to my knowledge, the large changes, Chair Tarr and members of the committee, made through the committee substitute to Senate Bill 227.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. We appreciate the overview of the description of the changes. Deputy Commissioner Goodrum, did you have anything you would like to add at this time? Okay. Committee members, questions for the presenters? Representative Ortiz.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So as to the overall intent of the and the purpose of the bill, I'm reading from a legal memorandum that came from Legislative Legal, and it says in the third paragraph down, according to the author, it is not clear what effect a statutory claim that the state owns submerged land beneath navigable water within and adjacent to certain federal areas in the state might have. In other words, it's not really clear what the impact of this particular law, if it was passed, would have. Would you like to weigh in on what you think the impact of this particular bill might have?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, over the 60-plus years of statehood, there has been little in the way of federal determinations of navigability statewide. The vast majority of waters statewide remain in the federal eyes undetermined. This frustrates any good system of land management. Clear definition of ownership must precede any effective management system. And so what we believe that this particular statute does is it does the work in all of the federal areas that are described statewide of identifying and doing the navigability determinations that we have waited 60 years for the federal government to get to. There has been particularly slow walking of these determinations in federal areas where this uncertainty is deemed by federal land managers to serve their advantage. They take the position again and again that if they own the uplands on either side, they will treat the waters and the submerged lands as their own, de facto. And that flies in the face of what was promised to the state at the date of statehood. Namely, through the Equal Footing Doctrine of the United States Constitution, the Federal Submerged Lands Act, and the Alaska Statehood Act, we got the submerged lands under all navigable, in fact, and tidally influenced waters statewide, unless there was a valid pre-statehood withdrawal. All we are doing with this legislation is making it clear these are the lands that were promised to us at statehood. And by having that clarity of title regarding those submerged lands, we believe that that gives the federal government one of two options. Either they can agree with our determinations or they can disagree. If they agree with our determinations, we have a clear definition of who owns what, and we can be good adjoining neighbors. You know, we can be good neighbors of owning abutting lands. And I'll give you a for instance that happened to me since I was last here before this committee. I was called shortly after the governor gave a press conference by the refuge manager for the Tetland National Wildlife Refuge. And he said, Jim, I think I have a number of docks and other infrastructure that have been built on state submerged lands. What do I need to do? I immediately took his information, reached out to one of my colleagues who is in the actual management, works for our regional office up there, and said, I've got this gentleman. He is the refuge manager there. He wants to know what he needs to do to get in compliance. She called him back immediately. They had a wonderful conversation. She was able to dispel a lot of his concerns because several of the activities that they were engaging in are generally allowable uses, right? He doesn't need a permit. They identified a handful of docks and other things that do need a permit. And working together, she got him the forms, explained to him that our state process is much simpler than the federal process that you're used to working with. Fill these out. You have questions, we'll help you fill them out. Get those in. We want you to be in compliance, and we'll do everything we can to help you get into compliance. A wonderful outcome. And that is where we are going with this legislation. We are hoping that if passed, this legislation will encourage federal land managers to either acknowledge state jurisdiction and do what state law requires to get into compliance. Or alternatively, if they think we are wrong and they think that they own the submerged lands, I respectfully submit that's what courts are there for. And we will litigate this matter, and we will, because our track record has been without blemish in the courtroom on these issues, vis-a-vis the federal government. And we have a lot of confidence that we will prevail on anything contained in our NAP Waters MAP or anything that we have respectfully put forth before this committee in this legislation. We will prevail in the courtroom.
Follow up?
Madam Chair, thank you. So, absent this bill, are you saying that the state has had no role as to what's been happening in relationship to waters that are adjacent to lands that are federally owned or managed? Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, absolutely not. We have been working very hard to clear the state's title. We have been working hard to seek RDIs or file quiet title litigation to secure clear title without any federal clouds on it through either of those two processes. The problem is that the RDI program is ridiculously slow and expensive. The average time that an RDI application is pending is a decade.
RDI stands for?
Recordable Disclaimer of Interest. It is the equivalent of a quick claim deed that the United States Congress, through FLIPMA, created as a quick and easy way for these disputes to be resolved and clouds to be removed whenever the parties are in agreement about things. We submit that that program has proven to be neither quick nor inexpensive throughout its duration. And we have right now, we're moving on 3 years without any substantial movement on any pending RDI application by the federal government. It has reached such a point that our federal congressional delegation has requested that the General Accounting Office audit the program, because money keeps getting pumped into the program and nothing ever happens, right? So we have been working hard with RDIs. We have been working hard with quiet title litigation. What this adds is the stamp of this legislature. It adds the position of the entirety of the state of Alaska that we are submitting these are state-owned submerged lands, so that there can be little question and little chance for evasion by the federal government by saying, well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We have made the issue clear. You can either agree with us or you can sue us.
Final follow-up?
Sure.
Appreciate that. So you mentioned that up to now these waterways have been, I don't know if you used the word inefficient, but have, I guess, lacked proper management. I guess that's what you're saying. But when I look at the list of waterways here, there's some that are like I use all the time. Ward Lake is a popular area right north of Ketchikan that everybody in the community uses on a pretty regular basis. You know, there's water, there's use of canoes and non-motorized, but other types of things that are on the lake all the time. Really popular place. I think it's pretty darn effective what the federal government's doing to manage that particular area, and it's quite popular. So why would I, something that's working really well, why would I feel good about all of a sudden the state having something to do with what happens on Ward Lake? I don't get it.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. First, I'll give you an example of a call that I received last week from a gentleman who lives on Prince of Wales Island. Older gentleman, he has been using his small jet boat on the Thorn River for decades. He has been repeatedly told this year by U.S. Forest Service that if he does that again, he will be ticketed. The Thorn River is listed, I believe it's 1807 or something like that, on the list contained within here. This is a situation where citizens are not in having the same level of satisfaction with federal management. But that goes even farther, sir. If my neighbor decides what I can do on my property, I don't know if I'm necessarily going to agree with that unless I concur with that. I don't think that it is fair to expect us, well, you know, they're managing our property pretty well when it's our property to manage. These are decisions that I respectfully submit should be made by the state of Alaska. And if there is a good management system, let it continue. But those are decisions that we as a state were promised at the date of statehood that we could make. These, as part of the equal footing doctrine, when we came into the United States, we came on the same footing as every other state, not getting any more or any less. In Alaska, there's a lot more water. There's a lot more rivers. It's a bigger state than Rhode Island or Connecticut. But it's the same deal that we got. And all of that was so that the state could stand on its own two feet and make these decisions. And I respectfully submit that when it's going great, let my neighbor make some decisions. But when it goes bad, it's my property, and I get to make the decisions.
I can appreciate that. Final question.
Okay.
Final question. So how about this? Is there a potential, if this were to bill to pass, that certain things that are currently being done at places like, and there's other places, but I just brought up Ward Lake, but there's a couple of other places where I'm quite familiar with. I go to those places. Wilson Lake is a really popular place for me to go. It's expensive to get there, but it's a popular place for me to go. What about the federal government having a role of keeping those places and the water, not just the surrounding area, but the water, up to shape, keeping them clean, all those kinds of things? Are we then expecting, if we get past this law, that somehow the state's going to be responsible for cleaning up the water portion of the waterways like Ward Lake, and then the federal government can keep cleaning up the outside area or whatever they do? How does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. Nothing within this legislation in any way affects the federal government's ability to monitor things like water quality through the Clean Water Act or otherwise, right? This is concerning with property ownership. And with that ownership of the submerged lands comes the ability to regulate the uses of the water flowing over the submerged lands. However, there is always the exception that if those uses are so extreme or degradate the adjoining lands that the adjoining landowner does not have to sit silently by. So in terms of water quality, et cetera, nothing would change with this. This is concerning the situation that John Sturgeon encountered.
Thank you. Thank you for answering this question. Appreciate it.
Okay, I need to take a stab at this so that I can feel like I have some clarity. So when we first started hearing the bill, you know, we sort of were hearing these responses, it's not going to do anything. And because of the RDI and the quiet title sort of process that exists. And so we've been trying to explore. And so as I understand it today, and having talked with folks that were part of the Sturgeon case, for example, is that, you know, the dissatisfaction on the part of the state is the amount of time it's taking to move through this process. If we pass this legislation, as you suggested, it's going to sort of set up a two scenarios situation. You know, the feds are either going to just relinquish basically and say, you know, you're right, these are state lands, and move on, or they're going to challenge it, which will result in litigation. So a couple of questions then. You know, one, I think I understand this correctly now in terms of, I feel like what we're doing with this legislation is sort of inviting litigation. And that could be an okay thing. But, you know, for me to understand it, the reason I say that is what I've learned from talking with these attorneys is that it's very unlikely that the federal government will just say, okay, state of Alaska, you're right. You know, and so what it's been suggested to me by attorneys is that it's more likely that the feds are going to want to litigate it. So if that's a possible outcome, you know, how should we be considering the potential for more lawsuits? And, you know, in terms of cost, I know we talked about statehood defense dollars and the budget and things, but, you know, how should we be evaluating that versus, you know, the process we're using now, which seems like we're sort of challenging it at a time when it comes up and is necessary. So, you know, if I have that first part right about sort of the two paths, either they relinquish or there's litigation, you know, saying that they don't relinquish and we get into the litigation path, you know, how do we expect, you know, each individual location could be litigated? You know, what does that mean in terms of lawsuits, and why would that be preferable to, you know, us using our resources, even if it's still to litigate, which, from what I've learned from you, Mr. Walker, sounds like that's been how all of these issues have been resolved so far. You know, resource wise, do we want to invite a lot of litigation, or do we want to go in the direction of us saying, you know what, we need to deal with Mendenhall Lake, and then we next need to deal with, you know, some of the locations that you've previously shared?
Chair Tarp, constant litigation is our reality right now. Okay. It is further complicated by the fact that the federal government has willfully declined to find something either navigable or non-navigable, thereby pulling the rug out from under us in court. They can say to the judge, when we file a lawsuit challenging, you know, claiming that these lands are ours, they can say, well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We haven't decided. And until we take a position one way or the other, you, state of Alaska, don't have standing. And that has worked in the past. So we are frustrated and in a constant state of litigation. Now, where does this help us in that regard? Where does that help us in this regard? It helps us in this regard because, as I have talked about with many of my counterparts on the federal side, that, you know, if you took all the waters in the state of Alaska, I think most people would agree that a big chunk of them are navigable and a big chunk of them are non-navigable, right? Mm-hmm. Why don't we do something that takes all the obviously navigable ones off the table and the obviously non-navigable ones off the table and focus on the ones where reasonable parties might disagree. This is exactly what this legislation does. We are teeing the issue up. We are saying these are our waters. We believe that these are our waters and we will prevail in the courtroom. And if they disagree with us, they can sue us. And guess what? That's what we're doing right now already. Mm-hmm. And we are having enormous success on that front. Mm-hmm. But the bad faith that was written about in the Mosquito Fork opinion continues to haunt us as a state, and our efforts to clear this title that was part of our birthright. Mm-hmm. And I submit that by identifying these, doing the work, planting the state's flag, that makes it easier, mm-hmm. easier for us to get into court and have a much more effective clearance of state title. And further, you know, to the extent, I don't know the attorneys that you've spoken with. Mm-hmm. I know that the lawyers with the Attorney General's office that I've spoken with mm-hmm. about this, and I believe Ron Opsahl might be on the phone as well, but Jesse Alloway, who is the Solicitor General who quarterbacked our efforts on the Mosquito Fork case. I don't think that this is in any way, shape, or form inviting more litigation. And in fact, I think it's having a different effect, that we are actually having meaningful discussions because we are asserting and standing up for what is ours. For example, I know that next week our commissioner is meeting with Raina Thiel mm-hmm. and is having conversations with Raina Thiel to see if we can work out some agreement about these infrastructure on state submerged lands within federal areas. They are attempting to at least begin the dialogue. And all of that is because we have things like Senate Bill 227 and House Bill 397 driving the federal government to the negotiating table.
Okay. I just want to let folks that are online for public testimony know we'll start public testimony here in just a moment. I have one additional question. I want to see if members have any others. So thinking about that a little bit more, then, one of the other issues that came up is that in terms of our ownership, it's relative to, you know, submerged lands and navigability as defined at statehood. Since some of that work wasn't completed, you know, here in 2022 with change, you know, there's going to be some, you know, difference in what would have been determined in terms of navigability at statehood, which versus what might be navigable now. So, you know, back in the scenario where the federal government either, you know, relinquishes or goes through litigation, it was also suggested, you know, what might make it challenging on the sort of relinquishing side is, you know, having to, you know, even if it weren't about disagreement, but you'd have to still, you know, be out there with the measuring tape, so to speak, right? So just the very particular exact location so that the ownership is clear, you may still have to, you know, have work done, or it may still invite litigation because, you know, what is in our legislation might not be correct relative to what would have been determined as navigable at statehood.
Representative Chair, we deal with that issue on a day-to-day basis. And the law says that if a river is in its natural and ordinary condition today, mm-hmm. and there haven't been any man-made changes to that river, for example, since the date of statehood, if it's navigable now, it's navigable then.
Okay.
That's what the law says. So it's something that we deal with in all of the field work that we conduct in litigation. Now, in terms of what we have to prove in the courtroom, we, in my team, and with working with the Department of Law and others, our partners in Fish and Game, for example, we embrace whatever new technology comes out that will help us in making those, you know, succeeding in the courtroom. So, for example, if we can today, on a river that is in its natural and ordinary condition, float the river in a boat that resembles a customary and traditional watercraft in all meaningfully significant respects, i.e. has the same draft, requires the same widths, etc., if we can do it now, it is presumptively navigable then. So one of the things that we will typically do is when we take these trips to prove these cases, we will also document everything that we are doing with drones, you know, unmanned aerial imagery, which is extraordinarily cost-effective way to do this. Mm-hmm. And so time and time again, we have gone into court where the federal experts have said, oh, no, 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 you cannot float a boat on this river. And we will, on videotape, be floating the boat frontwards, backwards, sideways, doing donuts through these obstacles that are supposed to be supposed to render the river completely non-navigable. Mm-hmm. Nothing in this hampers our ability to succeed in litigation. I further submit that it doesn't invite any more litigation, that rather that notion that we are somehow getting to a situation where we're going to be in more litigation than we are right now, I do not find credible. It's all litigation all the time right now. And it's, we're having to litigate the same issues over and over again. And you, for example, Chair Tarr, mentioned Mendenhall Lake, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The argument with Mendenhall Lake is that the Tongass withdrawal somehow defeated state title to the submerged lands. Mm-hmm. That the Tongass withdrawal defeated our claims to ownership of the submerged lands. Mm-hmm. The problem with that argument is it has been discredited and rejected by the courts.
Okay.
In, for example, our litigation regarding the Stikine River, mm-hmm. and this is, I think is instructive to talk about how the RDIs, the quiet title litigation, work together. That was pending for well over a decade. As we asked for an RDI saying, the Stikine River, come on, is navigable, right? They never resolved that. So we had to file in court, and then they promptly disclaimed that. Now, the Stikine River, the portions that were in controversy, fall within the Tongass withdrawal. DOJ did not find that Tongass withdrawal argument to be credible. As a result, they abandoned it and agreed to the ultimate disclaimer in court. The same was done on the Taku River. We filed an RDI. Forest Service said, well, you know, there is this Tongass withdrawal that defeats state title. And we said, no. That has been rejected. And BLM agreed and conveyed us through the RDI process, the bed of the Taku River. If that Tongass withdrawal argument had been worth anything, they could not have done so.
Okay.
Similarly, in the Chugach National Forest, the Chugach withdrawal is in all material respects identical in its wording to the Tongass withdrawal as it pertains to the issue of submerged lands. The IBLA, the Interior Board of Land Appeals, ruled on the Catala River case that the Chugach National Forest did not defeat state title to the submerged lands. So this continuing intransigence, this continuing to come forward with the same discredited arguments again and again gives, I think, a flavor of what our day-to-day litigation posture mm-hmm. vis-a-vis the federal government is now. Mm-hmm. This will help change that if Senate Bill 227, House Bill 397 is passed.
Okay. And so in terms of the number of areas covered here, I think what was suggested in terms of additional litigation was just if they were considered individually. I don't know how the federal government would respond, right? We're putting it all in one bill for these, you know, hundreds, I guess it is, in total locations. You know, if they look at them individually and say, okay, yes, no, yes, you know, that's, I think, what was the thinking around it may line up, you know, all of a sudden a bunch of litigation around that. How do you feel about that, Mr. Walker?
Chair Tarr, I don't see that happening.
Okay.
I mean, right now we are in all litigation all the time with the federal government because they are unwilling to make any movement on their RDI program, right? Our only options at this point are state assertions, management, in a sense, acting as if we are the owners, which we truly are, mm-hmm. or litigation. And we have a robust suite of cases that we are litigating against the federal government right now. They also have 180-day notices on several others. We have a very ambitious fieldwork plan for this summer. And there's going to be a lot more cases in litigation come fall.
Okay.
But there's nothing in here that makes our litigation posture and position and the strengths and merits of our case any different than they presently stand.
Okay. Any questions, Representative Vance or Representative McCabe? Okay, let's go ahead and go to the public testimony. We just have a few folks online, but very appreciative and apologetic of our schedule changes. That is the time of year we were in. We are in, and so thank you to folks who were able to call in, and let's go ahead and get started. So first online is Craig Compau from Fairbanks. Craig, if you are there, please state your name and affiliation for the record and provide us with your testimony.
Yeah, through the chair, this is Craig Compau, representing myself. I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska. My name is Craig Compau. I'm a 61-year resident of Alaska. Our family owns a 76-year-old boating business, and we've been boating on Alaska rivers and lakes since the 40s, so we know a thing or two about navigability. I understand that some members of the House have questioned the governor's motives for the passage of SB 227. It's not that difficult to figure out. Like most Alaskans that have been around for a while, I think the governor gets it. Before I was born, the state of Alaska was granted ownership interest in all submerged lands underlying navigable waters. We Alaskans were to manage these navigable waters, but instead we've been spending millions of dollars in litigation and decades of time arguing whether individual rivers are navigable when that shouldn't even be a question. This delay tactic and massive federal overreach by the federal government and the outside special interests has got to stop. SB 227 can achieve that by clarifying Alaska's ownership interest in navigable waters once and for all. That spinning sound you hear isn't the lonely fish wheel on the Yukon River. It's my grandfather spinning in his grave wondering why any Alaskan would not support this bill. I strongly support 227 and urge this committee to pass it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for our testifier? Okay, I'm not seeing any. Thank you so much for joining us today. Next, we have Mike Seawright from the Safari Club Board of Directors. And Mr. Seawright, if you would like to provide testimony, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. May it please yourself, Chair Tarr, and the committee members. I am Mike Seawright, Sewright. I am speaking today on behalf of the Alaska Chapter Safari Club International and John Sturgeon, SCI Alaska's president. I am speaking also as a former Alaska Assistant Attorney General who handled submerged land issues for the state for many, many years. SCI Alaska strongly supports Senate Bill 227, just as it has supported the companion House Bill 397. Mr. Sturgeon sent Chair Tarr a letter to that effect yesterday. John intended to testify before you today, but a close friend of his very recently passed away, so John is instead attending that Russian Orthodox service. He asked me to speak instead. I am an FCI Alaska board member. In addition, I was lead attorney for the state of Alaska's Department of Law, handling the state's submerged land and navigability matters for many years, including the Galkana River and Matanuska River lawsuits, which established the chief criteria by which navigable waters are identified in Alaska. I am now retired, but given that experience, I know the good in this legislation. I know its significance. As set out in the beginning of this legislation, SB 227, its purpose is to underscore Alaska's ownership of the lands underlying its navigable waters, and to also identify those state-owned waterways, especially in and adjacent to federal areas. It sets out the navigability criteria and standards, including the types of small watercraft use, which have been approved by the federal courts and the U.S. Department of the Interior judges as applied to Alaska. It does not try to expand the law at all. It simply repeats and clarifies the law on a matter which can otherwise be confusing to the public, and it identifies waterways coming within that law so that the public can understand which waterways the state asserts are navigable and under paramount state management. I had nothing to do with the drafting of this legislation, but it is well drafted. Language in this legislation is taken right out of the court cases, including the Galkana River case that went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. That case and others established that use or the susceptibility of use by small watercraft like inflatable rafts and riverboats capable of transporting 800 to 1,000 pounds of people and gear for tourism, guided fishing, etc., demonstrate the waterway's navigability. What is the significance of navigability? In addition to establishing state ownership and control of the submersible lands up to the ordinary high water mark, including the waterways, gravel, and sandbars, it establishes paramount state control of the overlying waterways for management purposes. That was the gist of John Sturgeon's recently successful, unanimous U.S. Supreme Court decisions against the federal government. Two final comments. First, SB 227 is not partisan legislation. I understand it passed the state Senate unanimously. Alaska's assertion of the public's right to its navigable waterways has never been a partisan issue. Every Alaska governor I served under as an assistant attorney general has strongly supported this issue, from Governor Jay Hammond to Democratic governors Bill Sheffield and Steve Cooper to the more recent Republican governors in their administrations. This is not a partisan issue of Governor Dunleavy. It is a decades-long nonpartisan issue. As already noted, it is also supported by unanimous Supreme Court. Secondly, during this committee's hearing on this subject, I and Mr. Sturgeon participated in last month, the issue of any expense associated with this bill came up. I believe there will be virtually no added expense. Probably nada. It doesn't lead to litigation. Identification and management of the state's navigable waterways is already an ongoing state function and has been for many years, as Mr. Walker pointed out. This legislation simply announces that function officially and identifies navigable waterways which are a result of that function, chiefly for public consumption and awareness. In that, it is much like the state legislation passed many years ago announcing and identifying historic RS-2477 trails, another statehood entitlement. Alaska also is entitled to 104 million acres of uplands from the federal government as part of the Alaska Statehood Act. Does the fact ownership of that 104 million acres entail some management expense mean Alaska should refuse ownership of that 104 million acres and the public's right to the use of that acreage? Of course not. In summary, we ask you to please pass SB 227 out of committee, and that you do so soon enough to allow the entire House membership to vote on it before the end of this legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seawright, for your testimony. Very much appreciate you sharing your history as a former Assistant Attorney General and the cases that you worked on. Any questions? I have a question. In terms of understanding why it's taking so long, you, as someone who's previously worked on this, what is your evaluation of the delay?
Generally, federal agencies' inability or failure to recognize navigable waterways, primarily, I think, because they want to continue jurisdiction, federal agency jurisdiction over those waterways, for example, within BLM land and federal parks, et cetera. I think it's just a reluctance to acknowledge state ownership. I don't think listing these waterways will result in more of that. To the contrary, I think the state identifying specific waterways will cause the federal agencies, managers, and higher-ups to work with the issue and try to resolve it, much as Mr. Walker indicated they are already doing to some degree recently when they learn of a specific waterway. In the past, specific waterways have not been identified, not to this degree, or there have been some identifications and correspondence going back and forth between state agencies and federal agencies. And then it gets shelved, a new administration comes in, and you start the wheel rolling again. I think it's just negative impetus and people not dealing with the issue. I think it's mainly a human issue and a bureaucratic issue. I think this legislation would really help, and it helps the public identify navigable waterways for use.
Thank you. And just one other question. You mentioned that you didn't think there would be any additional cost. And I guess that's something, you know, some of us, as we've been looking at this, or I should just speak for myself when I say some, just trying to ask others questions of what this might look like with state management. I guess it just seemed like we would need to put some resources because, you know, even if we do have this as an ongoing state function in terms of navigability, it seems like in this legislation we would significantly upscale the efforts that we have as our ongoing state work and that it may require additional resources. You know, maybe that's unknown at this time, but I guess I'm just curious of your response based on the work that you've done before.
Thank you. Through the chair and to the entire committee members, in my experience, it won't result in additional expense nor litigation. Could result in quite the opposite. And I also mentioned this. Should Alaska not incur some expense and manage the 104 million acres of uplands because there's that expense involved? I don't think that, just given my practice for years and years in this area, I don't think simple identification of these waterways is going to result in litigation or more litigation. To the contrary, by eliminating the uncertainty as to who's claiming what, you have a playing field where folks can discuss it and resolve it. Where they can't resolve it, there may be an issue. But as Mr. Walker pointed out, the state's record in this is unblemished. There is not one navigability case or issue I was involved in, including the Skokie River and many others, where the state did not ultimately prevail. And identification of these waterways comes right from the case law. It's simply identification, which helps the public and should help the federal managers and the federal managers talking to their administrators in Washington, D.C. and wherever, saying, hey, you know, this is what they're identifying. At least we know what it is.
Okay. One second, Mr. Walker, just while we're in public testimony. Just want to wrap this up. Representative Vance, did you have a question for Mr. Seawright? Please go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, is this this long process of determining our own waterways, is this common in other states, or is this 60-year battle unique to Alaska?
It's more common in Alaska, number one, because most other states don't have anywhere near the number of waterways that Alaska has. Many of the states were colonies where, you know, few waterways, where land was in private ownership, et cetera, so the issue didn't come up much. And more than that, perhaps, Alaska is the state where the federal government reserved after statehood, so it doesn't have an effect on navigability, but has many federal lands, more so, many times over, more so than in any other state. So you have a wet state, you have a new state, you have a new state that where the federal government is creating a number of reserves and such, again, after statehood, so it shouldn't affect navigability of waters. It won't. So you just have the federal government involved in Alaska much more than they are in terms of lands in any other state by many, many magnitudes. And they're reluctant to to see state lands and state management sometimes within those federal areas. Whereas, in fact, once the issue is met head on, they can usually agree. You have cooperative agreements and uses for like the Dalcana River, since it's also a wild and scenic river. But it's mostly just the extent of Alaska, and it's a new state, and there are so many waterways.
Thank you. That's helpful perspective.
Okay, seeing no additional questions for you, Mr. Seawright, thank you so much for joining us today and filling in on behalf of Mr. Sturgeon, and for sharing if you have any additional information based on your prior professional experience and working on these issues. Please feel free to share it with my office, and we will share with committee members. Next, we will go to Alex Johnson.
Hello. Through the chair, my name is Alex Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N. I'm calling in from Anchorage, and I am speaking both as a Alaskan who is an avid paddler and outdoor water recreationalist, as well as the Alaska Senior Program Manager for National Parks Conservation Association, which is a national nonprofit with 1.4 million members and supporters working to protect and enhance the national park system. And I would just like to speak, again, both as an Alaskan and on behalf of NPCA in our opposition to SB 227. You know, we believe that the state doesn't have the budget or the troopers to patrol all the rivers and lakes that it is claiming authority over. You know, we believe that the question of navigability is far less black and white than others who have provided testimony today are claiming, and that this bill will not necessarily make instantly, you know, create that clarity for the state of Alaska. I'd also like to say that, you know, there's been quite a lot of benefits to the waters of Alaska and lands of Alaska, and to the many benefits to Alaskans from federal management over the last 50 years of some of these waters that are being contested by the state. I very much feel like this is a careful what you wish for situation that may end up proving more costly for the state even if it were to win with some of its current goals with this legislation. And, you know, those funds, as we know, with the state budget rise and fall on an annual basis, and that, you know, state funds can be going to numerous other important uses for management of our lands and waters, including infrastructure for increased tourism, which we expect as people continue to use all of the incredible resources we have in Alaska that has, in part, been managed by federal agencies for decades now. So we just, again, like to register our opposition to SB 227 and appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Appreciate your testimony today. Your testimony, I guess, provides sort of the other side of some of what we've been getting in terms of feedback about how this would work and the process, you know, whether if we pass the legislation, what happens in the process going forward. So I don't know, through your organization, the question that Representative Vance had, you know, we can often learn from what's happened in other states. And since you're a national organization, do you have any experience or, you know, have you been involved or have any knowledge of this issue in another state where your organization works?
I would actually say, provide a similar response to the previous speaker that, you know, Alaska does stand alone as a unique case in land and water management, you know, not only because of the legal history here, but also the geography and the huge amount of water and wetlands here in the state. So I personally don't have, and I do not believe my organization has extensive knowledge on, you know, those fights elsewhere, but I would be happy to provide any additional information after this hearing.
Okay, that'd be helpful. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Johnson? Okay, is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Okay, I don't see anyone online. So at this time, we will go ahead and close public testimony. I want to come back to a couple questions. We had some outreach from the ANCSA regional corporations, and I don't know if you've heard from folks, but the message that was passed along was there was just a bit of concern that the bill was being rushed and that they hadn't been consulted. I wondered if you would want to address that or how you envision that relationship sort of advancing and say this legislation passes.
Chair Tarr, specifically, I was not aware of that until you read that. That had not been conveyed to me. Further, I would say that, remember, this legislation only concerns federal areas. Mm-hmm. It has no applicability whatsoever to Native corporation lands. It has no applicability whatsoever to other private property within the state of Alaska. It only pertains to National Park Service areas, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service areas, United States Forest Service areas, and BLM lands. That's it. No Native corporation lands are affected. Further, this bill does nothing whatsoever to affect Katie John in any way, shape, or form. Katie John remains, as the United States Supreme Court held in its Sturgeon opinion, that it remains in effect. And this bill does not emphatically have anything to do with the Katie John line of cases.
Okay.
And then lastly, in terms of meeting with, briefing regional corporations, I'm happy to talk with anyone about this legislation and welcome the opportunity to brief them up because, as some of the callers said, you know, this is nonpartisan. This is Alaska's birthright right here. Mm-hmm. And what we are talking about are federal areas only and state lands within those federal areas.
And because this comes up in the land selection issues where the state has also selected lands that corporations have selected and the overselection problem, is there anything like that that could happen in this regard? And that's what I wondered if there could be a concern about where it would impact, you know, are they trying to otherwise lay claim to lands that would then make these submerged lands native lands, not state lands?
Chair Tarr, absolutely not.
Okay.
There is nothing in this bill that claims lands, you know, to fulfill remaining statehood land entitlements or ANCSA selections, none of that. What we are dealing here are with federal CSUs, conservation system units, and other federal areas that have been created already in the state, right?
Okay.
Nothing outside those boundaries is subject to this. And so this is not in any way, you know, an additional assertion of state ownership of lands outside of federal areas, but rather confirmation of state ownership of submerged lands within federal areas.
Okay. And then last question for me at this time is thinking about the cost. And you said some of this work is ongoing state work, but I guess it's sort of like if you manage one apartment building, it might cost this, and then you add a second apartment building, you know, that might cost more. So I think, you know, some of the response, and as I've thought about it, is just should we be considering any additional resources? I know you said, you know, some of this is ongoing state work and the navigability part. I know we put funding into statehood defense. You know, are those the dollars that you're envisioning already cover any work that comes out of this legislation? Because I think, you know, still going back to this idea of if we have additional lands to manage or just even inventory, because now they're all state lands and maybe there are hundreds of docks, you know, that are legally permitted, allowable uses. But, you know, sort of just who even, you said you use drones, like who's going to do that work? I mean, it just feels like we should be considering as a part of this policy some resources to do it right.
Chair Tarr, that issue came up the last time this committee considered it. And I went back afterwards and did some numerical calculations for that. And if you add up every river mile that is contained within this piece of legislation, now understand, if passes, we will come back through an annual reporting requirement and suggest additions to the list. But the list that's contained in here right now consists of 8,971 river miles and 488,992 lake acres. That's everything that's in this bill right now. So we'll round up 9,000 river miles, round up 500,000 lake acres. Currently, DNR manages 100 million acres of state land. Of the statehood lands that have been conveyed pursuant to our statehood entitlement to date. Respectfully, the small addition of management authority imposed by this legislation is not, and I do not mean a pun by this, is a drop in the bucket concerning what we already manage. Okay. The second point I would make is that in most instances, there's going to be one permit applicant.
Okay.
And that's going to be the United States government.
Okay.
In the vast majority of cases, it's going to be the U.S. government that fills out the permit applications. And considering their long and involved and cumbersome permitting process, they can certainly fill out state permit applications quickly, particularly as assisted by knowing land managers.
Okay.
So considering ongoing work, what this adds is very little. further, I would argue that adjudicating a permit is exponentially cheaper than litigating a river.
Okay.
Remember John Sturgeon said his case cost $1.6 million. Adjudicating a permit, a few hours of staff time, particularly when the applicant is the United States government or through one of its agencies. I do not see that this adds anything to what I had earlier said, that I stand by that zero fiscal note.
Okay.
It is, and particularly with increased staffing that has already come through for DNR, this will be something that is easily within our grasp, the management of these lands.
Okay. Representative Vance.
Thank you. Through the chair, there's just, with the public testimony, I think there's something that needs to be reiterated. I think, Mr. Walk, you've made it very clear as far as management, but is it accurate statement to say that once this bill passes and that we make it clear that the state owns the submerged lands, that we are not going to provide an eviction notice on any of the federally managed waters because we feel likely that they're appropriate right now. But it's just making it clear in statute that we agree as a state by the legislative and executive, these are ours, and if an issue were to come up, we're going to assert our ownership. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, absolutely. When Governor Dunleavy announced his Unlocking Alaska initiative, we reached out immediately to the federal government. We said, you have infrastructure. Help us identify it. We want to get you in compliance. Nobody wants to go out and tear down docks or take down any improvements, particularly improvements that the public is enjoying. To all of those operators that were operating under federal permits, you know, commercial operators involved in the tourism industry or whatever, we indicated that as we work through the process of bringing you into compliance with state law, we honor the federal permits. We want to make this easy. We want to work with everyone, including the federal government. However, you know, over the course of the past year, time and time again, yeah, we're working on a list. We're working on a list. We're working on a list. And only recently, with the uptick in activity, have we seen numerous individuals, land managers from the federal sites, coming to us and saying, look, we've got this infrastructure. We need to bring it into compliance. Please tell us what we need to do. And that's where we want to get. We want to be treated as an adjoining landowner who can work together with the owner of the uplands for the public's benefit, but not be treated as a stranger, someone with nothing to say on our own lands.
Thank you. I hope that's helpful for a lot of the concerns as far as, you know, Rep. Ortiz mentioned that, and also one of the testifiers, and I know that there's others that are paying attention that may not see the fuller picture, but this seems like a very simple thing. I just wonder why we didn't do this so many years ago. Mm-hmm. This, to me, I have to remind myself that we're still such a young state, but this is showing that we are coming into our own, in my mind, that we are ready to take on the full ownership and say we're ready to bear the responsibility that's needed. We weren't at the beginning, and we assumed that we would have all of our rights, just like we're still fighting to get all of the university land that mm-hmm. was promised. And I'm hoping that this opens up those doors where the federal government takes us serious so that we can get all of those promises fulfilled to the state, and we can really step into our own maturity as a state to be able to have the land and pave the way also in the courts for our native landowners as well. So I see this as a positive and look forward to moving this along. Hopefully we can get this across the finish line just in time.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Representative McCabe, did you have a comment?
So just a comment, yeah. It takes two parties to negotiate. You know, the state could do all they wanted, and until the federal government comes to negotiate, we can just scream and holler and, you know, do the John Sturgeon case occasionally, that sort of thing. So I think this is a good bill. I think it may force the government, the U.S. government, to come to the table. I think it's helpful for natives, and I'm really looking forward to running my jet ski on Methanol Lake next summer. So,
thank you, Representative McCabe. Although that kind of comment may not get us closer to passing the bill. Thank you so much. Here's my role as the chair of the committee, you know, keeping the process moving. And so what we're going to do today is recess the meeting, because this is the only meeting we had scheduled between now and next Tuesday, when we'd scheduled another meeting when we're supposed to adjourn on Wednesday. And I'm going to set an amendment deadline for Saturday at noon. Legislative legal is very overwhelmed by now. So I, if anybody would have amendments, we need to be mindful of human capabilities at this time, and they are working literally as hard as they can around the clock. So we will recess today's meeting. We'll have that amendment deadline on Saturday. That allows us to come back and meet again, you know, when we can convene members prior to, you know, a scheduled meeting on Tuesday. And then I hope you'll continue conversations with committee members who weren't able to be here today. You know, for me, I've had to learn a lot about this to really wrap my head around what we're doing, what the long-term impact is, you know, if there are areas of concern. So thank you for helping us walk through that and educating us on that process. And so, you know, I have all my questions answered this time. I hope everyone else does. You know, that's what we've been trying to do. And this time of year, with all the uncertainty, apologies that the schedule has gotten so sort of switched around a few times on you. And thank you so much for being here in person. So at this time, again, amendment deadline Saturday at noon. And then we are recessing this meeting to the call of the chair. Thank you.